Welcome back, everybody. It's been a long time since you've heard the IT Pebble Pack. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, we'll try that again. Still, maybe a little tips. Welcome back, everybody. It's been a long time since you've heard the IT Pebble podcast, but it's here. It's back. It's going to be more regular, I promise. But I'm not joined with Tony. Oh, no. We have a very, very, very special co-host with me today. None other than co-founder of the IT Babble podcast, Mr. Omar Gosin.
Oh, that makes me feel so so much more important than I really am.
You are super important. But, don't let don't let people tell you different.
You know, they tell me, but I don't want to believe them. No, I'm glad, man. I can't believe this is like 142
number one
episode.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah,
crazy.
It is awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah. And of course, I'm recording from Indianapolis, Indiana, the home of the beleaguered Indianapolis Colts. They're a terrible team right now. And Omar, where are you at? So if you could let people
know. I'm in Dubai. We don't have a football team or a basketball team. we have the Dubai Camels. They're a hockey team, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And they're pretty active in the hockey scene.
There you go.
Yeah.
And they play at the I could be wrong, but I believe do they still play at the Dubai Mall ice rink?
They do play at the Dubai Mall, and they've actually played with I don't know how they do this, but every Canadian artist who comes and performs in Dubai somehow ends up playing hockey with the Dubai Camels. So Justin Bieber has played, I don't know if Bryan Adams played, but yeah, every time somebody comes in, you know, they get those Canadians on the ice with them. So
that's awesome. I didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have a fantastic, I mean, boy, this is a really good agenda. We're going to be talking about the fight against racist algorithms. How they are racist.
Those algos.
Algos, they're kind of mean. We're going to talk about how school leaders can combat the filter bubbles and fake news, and that's from Scott McCloud. But I think we're going to start off with Canadian schools silence teachers on social media.
And I lobbed up that segue. I set that up for you so well.
Love segues.
With a Canadian artist, but... We're rusty. We're rusty, man.
We are a little
I
rusty.
Served that up to you on a silver platter, but
we're working on it. We'll get better. It won't take us long to get back into podcasting shape.
Sure.
I sound like garbage, by the way, people, because I forgot my Zoom at school, and so I'm just using my computer microphone, which I'm sure it sounds.
You sound good to me, Patrick.
Well, thanks. You sound fantastic, by the way, with your snowball.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a great USB mic. Anyway, so did you read the article here about this is from Andrew Campbell from his personal I saw this thing on Reddit, and I was like, "Whoa, okay." So basically, he's talking about teachers who use social media, and maybe they criticize the school or talk about the school or the school district, and then they either lose their job or they get repercussions. You know, they kind of get a slap on the wrist or talked to I was wondering, you know, this is always an ongoing thing. What's the policy there at your school in Dubai? What do they have to say about social media and teachers on it and things like that?
Well, Dubai has, I mean, we've talked about this. Dubai has their own social media policies that kind of dictate what the schools can and can't do. So in Dubai, you really can't speak ill of your employer. So if you work at a school, whether you're speaking education or not, you can't really come out against your employer. So it's a little tricky in that sense. Mm-hmm. So the school's policies are often dictated by the country's policies. But yeah, I don't know. That's it's weird to hear that, you know, a school in the States or a school in Canada or, you know, telling their teachers they can't post on social media about education. The way I understood it was you can't talk about education online. So, like, you can't use your own social media as a platform to, let's say, discuss behavioral management techniques or assessment techniques. So that strikes me as really odd and very Orwellian.
Yeah.
Or Orwellian.
Yeah. Good term, by the way. I like it.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. It took me a second to get that out.
I like it. I just finished 1984 again. I just reread it. It's kind of good. Big Brother and all that good stuff. Yeah, because Big Brother's great. That's where we want to go. No, it's good. I mean, I see it from both sides. Like, if you have something and you want to make a point, and social media is a great place to get your thoughts and your views out there, because often, and I mean, we both experience this often, sometimes the administration or the higher ups at the school, they don't actually drill down and ask each individual teacher or about a particular policy or anything. And it's a good way that you can kind of get your voice out there. But at the other side, I can see how that can be disruptive. And like, you know, the school district is trying to move forward with a particular policy, and people are criticizing it online and almost sabotaging it in a way. And I mean, I can see it from both sides, but where would you, if you were a head of a school or a school district, Mr. Omar Gosin, what would you do? Mm-hmm. What would your social media, pretend that you're living in a wonderful place where, you know, the walls are as open as you want them to be or as tight as you want them to be? What would your social media be, your policy be?
Well, I mean, ideally, I mean, if you're, this is going to be a two-pronged response. One, if this, you know, you're building a community. A school is a community. And if you're going to be, slinging mud, so to speak, online, you're going to be affecting that community, right? But the second part of my response to this would be, you're hiring adults, and these adults need to have filters. And I think the problem is that, and I see this with the students a lot, and I think it's just as problematic with a lot of adults as well, is that people use social media as a knee-jerk reaction to, there's almost no filter. In the past, people were discussing things, you know, publicly. They would use their community newsletters, or they would, you know, write an op-ed in their local newspaper, or they would, you know, try to contact and, you know, the local news outlet, etc. But then, you know, doing that kind of is a filter in and of itself. It has to be something pretty bad for you to take those steps and to take the time to write that op-ed and, you know, send it, and then somebody edits it or looks at it and then deems whether it's something that they can post, you know, for the next printing or airing of that, you know, issue or newscast. Whereas social media, you can just be like, blah, 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 and, you know, slam down on the keyboard and that's it. It's out there.
Yeah.
And it can be damaging to, you know, the discussion, to the dialogue. And you might be trying to work towards, let's say, like a policy that everyone's working on or an initiative. And if you sling mud or try to fuel that fire, you know, social media has proven to just get out of hand, and you're spending more time, you know, trying to put out fires as opposed to continuing that dialogue. So
I completely agree. I mean, you could have good intentions with the social media, but you're right, it can really quickly get out of hand, and how people interpret it and how people take it, and then it can be a huge distraction for the school district or for the school. And I think if you say something, you have Well, in America, I mean, we have freedom of speech, but there's also repercussions to what you say. And if you say something that completely slams a particular administrator or a school district, and they deem it unacceptable and a violation of their policy, they do have a right, I think, to fire you, or to take some punitive actions against you. I'm not, you know, saying that people should shut up and stay in their place, but you're right. These are adults we're dealing with, and maybe social media isn't the best place to have that conversation. You know, have at 140 characters at a time.
Right. I mean, the thing is, ideally, we want to teach our kids to have those filters. Teach our kids to use social media, use technology, be good digital citizens, and use it responsibly. And if you can't, as an adult, use it responsibly, then yeah, you probably deserve the repercussions that are coming at you. Like if you're going to be, what's the word I'm looking for? If you're defamation of character, or yeah. If you're, you know, man, terms are slipping my mind.
That's okay.
If you're saying something libel or, you know, yeah, there's going to be consequences.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, you can't just sit there and say, well, I've got freedom of speech and they're restricting my speech and blah, 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 blah. You know, I mean.
Yeah.
I like to think, I was like, well, how does this help you teaching the students in your classroom? Like, how does that improve it? I mean, are you speaking their thoughts, or is it just your thoughts? Or so people, if you're going to go out there and you're going to pick a fight on Twitter or Google Plus, because I know that's what all the cool kids are using nowadays.
Yeah, just, all my kids are using it.
Just think it through. Don't impulsively type and post. You know, just think it through. There's probably a better way to approach this this particular topic. So, anyway, I thought it's good. People are still, you know, struggling with it. I remember my my older brother, when their first policy at his school was you can't have a Facebook account. You can't even have a Facebook account.
Oh, jeez.
That was wonderful, wonderful policy. And since you weren't supposed to have a Facebook account, then there was absolutely no reason to worry about posting anything bad about the school district. So I think they have since updated it. But yeah, just think, people. Just think out there. Think. So
I agree.
So Omar, how is your artificial intelligence going? Is it pretty good? Are your AI in your home?
I'm still trying to work on my own intelligence. So I'm still kind of working on that. So I don't know about the artificial intelligence. I don't know. I think it's the world of AI is quite interesting. I talk about it in the IB course, ITGS, and we often discuss the pros and cons to AI and what does it look like, and the limits and the extents of its applications in various fields like medicine. I was actually, and in computer science, we were talking about this one artificial intelligence system that was predicting, or not diagnosing, but predicting diseases or the onset of certain diseases and afflictions. And it was eerie how accurate it was. Something like, this is just an example, but it would say like, patient X has, you know, a 93% chance of contracting, this kind of cancer in the next 6 months, and boom, it happens. And the scary thing is that they were, the developers were trying to figure out how this machine, what parameters and logic was this system using to get to those predictions. But because it was kind of machine learning, the machine was figuring out these connections, but the developers themselves who actually wrote the code couldn't figure out how the machine was making those predictions. So they had no idea what links the machine was making.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? So the people weren't learning anything. Like the humans weren't learning anything. They were just getting the predictions, but they couldn't figure out how the machine itself was making the predictions. And the machine obviously wasn't coded to inform the people. And so they're like, how is it coming? And it was eerily accurate, and they couldn't figure out how is it actually, figuring these things out.
That's pretty cool. I mean, well, it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't help us. I mean, it helps us, but at the same time, it's like, well, how does it help us? And I saw an interesting article on The Outline, theoutline.com. And it's talking about, like, artificial intelligence and these algorithms that you were talking about there that can do some really incredible things. But these algorithms are written by people, and people can have biases, and they can be racist, or they can have maybe they're a little misogynistic, and perhaps that comes through in their algorithm and how these AIs work. I was wondering if you had you being an IT teacher, do you guys talk about that in your class or not? Or it's kind of a new thing. I haven't really thought about it until just this year, and I heard something about it on the New Agenda show, and I saw this article on Outline about just how code, people just, not that maybe they're openly, like a white supremacist or they hate a group of people or and they're coding with that goal in mind, but maybe they have some, they like young people instead of old, they relate more with younger people instead of older people. And so their code, is slanted more for younger people than that kind of thing. And I was wondering, that bias that some people have can show up in the code. They talk about here.
FaceApp.
Google's Photos.
Go ahead.
Where Google Photo, the tagging service, because you can type in, beach photos, and it'll show you all the beach photos. Where they typed in, photos of black people, and it returned photos of gorillas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's pretty racist. That's pretty, they have since fixed it, but, if they're... Mm-hmm. But somehow, whoever wrote that code obviously didn't intend for that. But the way they wrote it, that's how the code functioned and worked.
An app like that, like that situation is more crowd. Like that, that's not. I wouldn't put the blame on the developers there. I'd put the blame on the people who would see the image, and instead of tagging it gorilla, they were the ones putting those things. And there was enough people who were doing that. That when you did, see that image, it gave you, the term, black people, for example. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the problem is that there were enough citizens, digital citizens, that were poor digital citizens that were, typing that out. And so that got picked up by the algorithm. And so you could have, let's say, every time you saw a car, if you typed in bicycle and you wanted an image of a bicycle, you'd get an image of a car. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with that. But the article also mentioned an application called FaceApp that would transform your face using, and I put it loosely like artificial intelligence. But so if you wanted to be more hot, in quotation marks, it would take a face and it would make it lighter skinned, smaller nose, more like round eyes, etc. And so people felt that was being racist right? It was lightening the skin and making you look essentially more white, even if you were, if it was an image of a black individual, right?
Yeah.
But then again, this is a situation where it's not the artificial intelligence necessarily itself, but it's the amount of data that the system has. So if 90% or 80% or 70% of the people who are submitting images and, you know, are white, and then a smaller percentage are black and a smaller percentage are Asian, et cetera, the system's not going to have enough data to figure out, okay, well, you know, this is this, you know, this is an Asian person, or this is a Middle Eastern person, and so maybe their idea of hot is different than a white person, or different than. Do you see what I mean? Like,
it's
just the amount of data that if most of the people who are using it are from category X, your system is going to skew the results towards category X until the system has enough data that it can go, okay, well, my algorithm picks up that this person is darker complexion, you know, blah blah blah, so they might be Middle Eastern. So if, you know, and based on all of the things that the Middle Eastern users have been saying is hot, then I will, you know, make the assumption or make the prediction that this is what they would think is hot, right? It's a little tricky because it's the amount of data that the system has to work with and where that data is coming from.
Oh, so it's not just people coding, making these things.
Yeah.
It's also the data with which they're pulling from.
Right, and that's the key, is the data, right? So.
Oh, that's a very good point, and that's something that the article really doesn't talk about.
Yeah.
So that is fantastic. That's a really good point. I never thought of it that way. I was just like, wow, you know, these guys, you know, it's, you know, coders tend to be men. Mm-hmm. More than women, and so yeah, you'd think you would see more, but yeah, you're right. They're pulling from data, and the data that they have access to, that's got to really determine what the AI can do and what the AI does.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, I mean, if you take let's say 100 images, which, and of course 100 images is nowhere near enough data for a system to use, but just saying, let's say if 99 of those are white individuals and one of them is an Asian person, obviously the data is going to be very skewed, right? And
yeah.
And eventually, maybe after a long time, the system is going to start picking up that, hey, wait a minute, I'm noticing that there's a type of face that keeps coming up. 1% of my faces has these characteristics, then maybe it, you know, but again, it's the amount of data that it has to work with.
Man.
So.
That's pretty cool. I mean, yeah, it's something that people, because obviously right now, with Harvey Weinstein and,
oh, jeez.
And yeah, I mean, this is kind of like a hot topic, you know, inequality within the workspace or people feeling uncomfortable and, you know, people not being represented properly. This is a really big issue right now in the U.S., probably in other places too. And so I thought this was just an interesting thing. I mean, when you talk to your students, does this ever come up? Do you guys talk about this stuff at all?
Well, we haven't talked about this in particular, but we do talk about things like data mining and data matching and, you know, what happens when you have all of this data that you can kind of peruse and pick up on patterns and things like that, and what can, you know, organizations do with that data and those patterns that they're finding. But we haven't talked about the the skewed data.
Yeah.
Here I'm actually, the article's like right in front of me. There's the Fairness, Accountability, and Transparency and Machine Learning Conference. You know, so we haven't looked at like the fairness of the algorithms, like, but that's actually really interesting conversation that I think we'll definitely be talking about.
Yeah, it's pretty, I don't know, it's just, if kids are using, like, a, you know, Google, I mean, I'm not saying Google is racist or anything like that, or sexist or anything like that, but what if that kind of creeps into their, and kids are using it all the time, will kids learn that that is okay, I wonder? I don't have an answer there, but...
Well, I mean, definitely. I mean, I think, like, if... The thing is, and that this is where, and this is a topic that we do talk about, is the idea of globalization and the watering down of the diverse cultures that are out there. So if you talk about, let's say, Google, which is so pervasive, right? And if you have people all around the world using it, and, you know, you're looking at, I don't know, I'm going to say something very kind of simplistic, but if everybody types in definition of hot, you know, or sexy.
Yeah.
If 80% of the people using it are Westerners with white complexions and, you know, certain type of features, then the system, the AI, is going to be skewed in favor of the majority, right? And so if you have people searching that and constantly coming up with these images, then they are going to feel like they're not attractive. That, wait a minute, if the definition of attractiveness is lighter skin, you know, smaller noses, whatever, I'm just using what the article is saying.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that could definitely have an impact. Just like we know that with photoshopping, when the pervasiveness of photoshopping in magazines and advertisements has led to girls having completely unrealistic expectations that they'll,
when I was in Dubai with you, that was an issue that that cropped up in the middle school more than once. Mm-hmm. About these unrealistic body images that these girls had. All right. So that's some really good points. Yeah, I agree. It could definitely have an impact. And I think one good way of kind of battling it, and, you know, I'm kind of biased here because my wife is a librarian, but just doing, you know, going into some non-technology research and getting away from just, you know, typing things into Google and using apps or whatnot, you know, going another route. To get a different perspective, I think would be very helpful for,
mm-hmm.
for people, and not just, you know, like relying on news articles, because news articles, I don't know about over there, but the news here is it's very slanted one way or another. It's mm-hmm. very difficult to get kind of a neutral, balanced kind of data or information, as you might say, and so it's Yeah, it's definitely going to be, I think, a problem in the future, and
I think that's where, I mean, we as educators, I mean, this has nothing to do with technology, right? But and a lot of, you know, the English teachers, the history teachers, you know, the social sciences teachers are all hopefully trying to do this, and that's to help teach kids to vet their sources and to, you know, get information from multiple sources and to try to understand why, you know, source X is saying this, whereas source, you know, Y might be saying something different.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be kind of cool if eventually you have, because like my dad, who's in Lebanon, has to read, you know, 5, 6, 7 different newspapers to get a clear picture of what's happening with a certain event, because every newspaper has such a slanted view, like you were saying, of an event. And once, the thing is that he usually has a much better perspective of what's happening than most other people, because he's actually taken the time to synthesize this information from different, you know, viewpoints, which, you know, I wonder, like, can artificial intelligence do that? Can it kind of like look at 5 different perspectives and then collate it together and make it like one, in a more balanced view?
That's a really good question. And I think inadvertently, I think we are so damn good, we have actually slipped into our next topic, which is talking about how school leaders, this article from Scott McCloud, how school leaders can combat filter bubbles and fake news. And I think we're kind of sliding into that. I think mm-hmm. we've actually slid into it already. So that was that was smooth. That was smooth, sir.
That was inadvertent, completely inadvertent.
That was a little
orange. That's how good we are.
Orange boom, smooth right there, folks.
Boom.
Yeah, we can't get orange boom in the States. I can't.
Yeah,
I can't.
You have to go way back for the boom.
Yeah, you have to go way back. I've had to. Yeah, boom. Anyway, so that's fantastic. Like talking about, because what a lot of people like when you type into Google, and if you're signed into your Google account, it remembers what you search and it tries to give you mm-hmm. results that you think it thinks that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And the same is on Facebook and so on. And so you kind of live in this bubble. It tries to give you things that you're looking for, things that will make you happy. And so mm-hmm. sometimes getting, you know, going into Google and trying to find opposite or, you know, articles that are fair is maybe not as easy as just typing it in. Like, you know, what happened? Like, I think Spain is a perfect example. I don't think America knows what to think about Catalina. And what's mm-hmm. happening there, you know, they voted for independence and America's like, yeah, we're all about freedom. And then they're like, but we like Spain. And what, wait a minute. Spain doesn't like this, what's happening. They don't, you know, and so trying to get like some news and get a sense of what's really happening in Spain is difficult. It's very difficult. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's filter bubbles, well, fake news.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the topics that I do talk about with my kids is these bubbles that are created, and Facebook is one of the biggest culprits. Their algorithms actually put you in a bubble of like-minded people, mm-hmm. and they actually, without your consent, delete or purposefully not share topics with you from "quote unquote friends" that they don't think you will, you know, engage with. So if let's say you have a friend who has a different political leaning than you, but you do listen, you know, you do read his messages, but you never maybe give it a thumbs up, right? Just you read it and you appreciate their input, but you never directly engage with the article or the post. Those posts get filtered out, and so you don't end up seeing those. So you'll only see the ones that you do engage with, that you do give, you know, the thumbs up to or, reply to or comment to. And so Facebook is creating these bubbles where you are not being exposed to different mindsets and different perspectives and opinions and things like that. And that can be very damaging to the younger generation that doesn't realize this and doesn't try, you know, to expand their horizons, so to speak. They're content being in their little bubble and they don't even realize it.
Yeah. He talks here in his article here. I'm just going to read a little bit here. The school leaders also must recognize that in order for students to be actively engaged in and critical consumers of digital and online information channels, they must have access to technologies and online environments that are often heavily filtered. And that's very much what you're talking about right there. You know, Facebook is heavily filtered for you. It's not a free, I mean, it's not just this tap of information. It's been curated to show you exactly what it thinks you want to see.
Exactly, because they want you to be as engaged as possible, because the longer you're on a page that you're engaging with, the more money they can make, the more ads they can show you, they end up wanting you to see what, you know, or they decide what they think you want to see.
Yeah, and I'm going to read something else, and we've talked about this on our show and written about it on the blog. In fact, you made a freaking T-shirt about it, which was awesome. Schools also have to stop treating students as, quote, digital natives, unquote, who already are knowledgeable about and proficient with technology. End sentence. Yeah, just because our students grow up and technology is all around them doesn't mean they know how to use it properly or understand how it's being filtered or, because they can often find themselves in an echo chamber. And not understand the other side, which may have some very, very valid points. So it's just it's very, very, very interesting. I liked what he wrote. Just the whole article, it really resonated with me. And I think that schools often get caught up in the emotions of a particular topic, and that there is this quote social correctness that this is the social correct stand you have to have on this particular topic, and that's kind of what we have to teach, but without actually exploring the other sides, which may not be very popular, but I think it is important to talk about those other sides and kind of try to see it from those other perspectives and see what they are trying to gain or what their perspectives are or why they feel different from the popular media and stuff. So it was very, very cool.
I totally agree, and I just love that you mentioned the whole like digital native, because I haven't thought about the term that was on my T-shirt called digital fetuses.
Digital fetuses, right?
Yes, yeah. Because they're not developed yet, and they like you said, they were born into this, and so they haven't figured it out. They were born inside their bubbles, right? I think that's where classrooms or teachers that help the kids look at different perspectives and try to see different angles, see an event from different angles, do the best, they're doing a real service for these kids who have no idea, right? Like they don't realize that they're living in a bubble. They're just getting, they're becoming these little,
what you would call it.
No, they're becoming these like these little commercial sponges, of just information that's being fed to them, for one purpose. And that's for them to be more of a consumer, for product X, Y, or Z.
Another thing that Dr. Scott McCloud writes about here, and this is a really tough thing to do that you and I, we don't have. I mean, we can try to have some control here, but really we don't have much. School leaders also, and this could actually, in your case, it may even expand beyond school leaders, but school leaders also must create safe spaces for teaching and learning about controversial topics. And that's often not in the teacher's control. I know in Dubai, if there are probably certain topics which are perhaps even illegal to talk about in schools. And it could not just get you fired, but perhaps even deported or thrown in jail. So and here, I don't think it's, I think there are probably topics that I could try to talk with my students here, and I could find myself, in front of the head of the school and getting my wrist slapped or worse. Schools obviously want to make this a place about learning and inclusive, but some of these topics are they're very touchy, very, very, very touchy. And, you got to tread lightly. It would be great for teachers to talk about, say, different gender and have a discussion, but that's a very difficult, controversial topic to bring up in a class. And anyway, I just liked his article. I thought it was good. Dr. Scott McCloud, Dangerously Irrelevant. People, go out there and check it out.
It's definitely a good read.
Yeah. And you had an agenda item, Mr. Ghostin, mm-hmm. about kids being obsessed with their phones. And I think this kind of goes into, you know, filter bubbles and fake news, because that's probably their primary device with which they're consuming this news and this information and this media.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to kind of bring that
it's
in.
It's that damn snappy chat that they're all using.
Snappy, yeah.
They're chatting and snapping, and they can't even focus on their class. Damn these kids these days.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. This is definitely probably we could spend an entire episode on. And so I find it incredibly frustrating when I see these kids who are just so connected, like physically connected to their devices, to the point where I've seen kids who have to have their hands on their phone in class. And when you ask them to put their phone away, they almost have a physical aversion to putting it away, because it's almost like a pacifier for a child, for an infant. These kids have gotten so addicted to that instant feedback and the feedback that they get when they post something, they get a response from a friend, and then they get that affirmation, and then they post again to get more of that affirmation, and it becomes like a drug. And I was actually reading an article a while back. I don't have any information about it. I'll have to kind of look it up again, and we can probably spend an entire podcast on it. The author, who is a Google scientist, apparently, ooh. A Google philosopher. Apparently they have that, but they have everything.
Have it all.
he was talking about the idea of how addicted kids have become, and how adults too have become almost just as addicted to these social media applications. And he was citing how companies like Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat hire gambling game designers to help them develop their apps, because they want it to be addictive. They want to figure out how can we elicit that response, that addictive response.
Yeah.
Reinforcement now it's slipping my mind again.
Oh, no, that's rusty. That's all right. I read a book. I'm just going to jump in here, by Adam Alter, called Irresistible. And it talks very much about, he calls it behavioral addiction. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Behavioral addiction. Now, the book itself is not that great. It just borrow it from your library. Don't buy it, because it's not, he stretches to make his point too often, and I think he hurts his argument more than actually makes his argument. But he does have some good points about behavioral addiction, and he talks about a little bit about how these people do hire, you know, people who like make slot machines and gambling games. Mm. He does talk about that, and that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. I'm seeing it now with my ninth graders. They have this physical aversion to putting it away, and they have to have their hands on their phones. And the funniest thing is to see a kid or hear a kid's phone buzz, and then watch their reaction when they realize that they cannot reach for that phone, to see who posted what, whether it was, what did they just get a like, did they get a thumbs up, did they, yeah. you know, and yeah. they look like literally like addicts. They start to fidget in their chairs. They start to try to reach for this phone, and they don't know how to do it, because, you know, you're obviously hopefully watching them, and you're, you know, making sure that they're engaged in the activity that they're, you know, supposed to be doing. And they're squirming so bad to try to get to that, because they need that as teenagers. I mean, they need that affirmation, right? And these apps have just made it that much worse. It's like, it's like a drug or a pacifier, you know?
In the school I'm at now, it's just preschool through eighth grade. So middle school is kind of where typically these kids get these phones and these devices. And our middle school is one-to-one iPads, but we have certain things blocked, you know, like they can't install the Facebook, they can't install their own apps. They can't, and we have Facebook blocked for the students, and they can only get on the student Wi-Fi. They can't get on the teacher Wi-Fi, and YouTube is blocked. So I thankfully don't have to see or deal with that, like kids on their phones all the time. I mean, we see them after school on their phones, but really during the day, we don't see them on their phones much, which is nice. But I can only my last middle school I was at, I know exactly what you're talking about, because it was like I couldn't keep them off of their phone. They just it's like you would hear a buzz and you wouldn't have to, you know, I wouldn't look up to see who everybody wanted to know. It wasn't like I look up and say like who was looking, oh my gosh, my phone buzzed. It was like there was, you could see like five or six people, maybe who were just friends of that person, wanting to know. You could just see it, and they reacted just like you said, like they're fidgeting and they're completely distracted. Whatever they're working on, that's done and over with. You know, it'd have to be addressed, and I would have to be like, okay, it's fine. Don't look at your phone, whoever it was. It can wait. It's not super important. If it's really, really important, they'll call the school and then they'll come and get you. You know, and there's
But it's amazing what we think is an emergency, you know, like a family emergency to them. It's almost irrelevant if they're, you know, in the middle of a quote unquote Snapchat streak and they want to make sure, you know, that they just got, you know, their 30th like, because if they don't get 30 likes, then they are somehow, you know, insignificant or not as popular, or it's just it's amazing how that the technology has kind of shifted how kids view themselves. You know, it used to be, you know, you'd get affirmation from your friends, or, you know, the popular kids would get the high fives and be invited to parties. Now it's like, if you don't get 30 likes, then you're not popular.
Yeah, and I'm gonna interrupt you here because I got to educate you a little bit, Omar. I'm so sorry. It's a little embarrassing that we're doing doing a technology podcast, and it's not a Snapchat streak. It's called a Snap Streak. I'm sorry. They even have Snapchat even has a fact about it. They have a FAQ about Snap Streaks.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. It's like, what, you know, and you get a little fire emoji, and then like, what does this mean? How do you keep it up? How do I know if it's going to end soon? Can I have a snap streak in a group? And it just, you talk about addictive behavior. I mean, they're telling you, you know, keep doing this, you know, don't break this. Keep Snapchatting every day with this group or these people.
Keep them hooked, man. Keep them hooked.
Yeah.
Give them a little taste and then keep them hooked.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my motto when I was peddling on the street. No, I'm just kidding. I never did that. No, and I actually just found the guy, the author of that article that I was talking about.
All right, we'll put that in the show notes.
How Technology is Hijacking Your Mind. He was a Google design ethicist, so not exactly a philosopher. But a Google design ethicist, which is quite an interesting title.
Go ahead.
His name is Tristan Harris, and it was he has a series of these articles, and where he talks about design of these social media applications. So quite interesting character. He has some really interesting articles, and we might be able to devote an entire episode on his writings, actually.
I just dropped the article in the show notes right there, and they will be there on Podomatic and on iTunes, where you can find our IT Babble podcast. So
nice.
That's good. I don't know. Do we have anything else to talk about? Do you have any other any other topics you want to drop in there before we go?
No, I think we're good.
I think it was a good show.
We don't want to, I think it was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. It was so good to get you back on, and hopefully our next show. Now, I don't want to put too much pressure on us, but we actually might have you, myself, and Tony for the first time in a long time. The trifecta.
Yeah.
Nice. So, but I'll get this show up pretty soon. And anyway, for IT Babble, I'm Patrick,
and I'm Omar.
Keep babbling out there, and we'll see you on the next episode. Talk to you later. Bye bye.
Bye-bye.